Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Recreational marijuana is now legal in Massachusetts, though the Cannabis Control Commission has yet to grant any retail licenses. But the state is already rolling out a PSA campaign to discourage people from driving while under the influence of the weed.
There are roads.
The ones you take.
The ones you don't.
There are laws.
There are rules.
And there's you.
You driving.
You drunk driving.
You driving high.
You stoned. And driving.
You spinning.
Crashing.
You arrested.
You killing.
My mom or yours.
My daughter.
My sister.
My love.
My life.
And yours.
There are roads.
And then there are just dead ends.
So here with us to talk more about the risks of driving while high and the challenges for law enforcement is John Carmichael. He's chief of police in the town of Walpole. He's also a member of the state's Special Commission on Operating Under the Influence and Impaired Driving. Chief Carmichael, thanks so much for coming in. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Also with us is Dr. Kevin Hill. He's the director of the Division of Addiction Psychiatry at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He's the author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. Dr. Hill, thanks for coming in. Good to have you.
Great to be back.
So I'll start with you, Dr. Hill. Can you tell us a little bit about how marijuana impairs someone, particularly someone behind the wheel, and how it might differ, for example, to alcohol impairment?
Sure. So I think one way to start is as a common saying in this topic is we think about how these two substances affect you. So they both affect you, but they affect you differently. And so, and again, I didn't create this saying, but they say that when you're drunk, you run red lights. When you're stoned, you stop at green lights. And I think that refers to the types of errors that you make when you're under the influence of these substances. So for alcohol, for example, if you're intoxicated, you will not check your mirrors. You'll lay on the gas. You'll make what we call errors of omission. You won't do what you're supposed to do. If you're using cannabis, you're more likely to understand that you're impaired. So then you will make what we call errors of commission. So you might be overly cautious. And so if you're driving,
suddenly doing 30 miles an hour in a 50 mile
exactly,
an hour zone or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's dangerous as well. So I think it's critical to point out that both of these substances affect you, but in different ways. And we should also point out that your experience with the substance, the type of substance that you use, the formulation makes a difference as well.
There's probably a popular notion, maybe among young users of marijuana. I know there was when I was young, where maybe both impair you, but somehow marijuana impairment is less dangerous than alcohol impairment. Is that just a popular notion that we need to dispense with?
I think it is a popular notion that we need to dispense with. I think it really makes a difference the dose of the substance that you're using, how much you're using. So cannabis, if you're not accustomed to using it, and you, let's say you use a concentrated product which is far more potent than you were expecting, then it's going to have a significant impact upon your ability to drive.
Right. Chief Carmichael, what do your police officers, what do police officers in general look for in terms of driving while high? How do you sort of, how do you describe the risk?
Sure. Well, initially, there's usually some type of motor vehicle infraction that will take place that will that everything will originate with. And that might be, like we just said, issues with the traffic light, driving too slow on a highway, anything like that that would alert the officer that something is different from this vehicle from the all of the other vehicles on the road. And then usually they will affect a motor vehicle stop. And once that happens, they are trained to make certain observations. And whatever that person might display as far as impairment, the officer would take note of that. And typically what would happen is if they do think there's any likelihood of impairment, they'll give an exit order, and the officer will then ask them to perform either field sobriety tests if it has to do with alcohol, or now following the Gearhart case here in Massachusetts by the SJC, we could do roadside assessments of that person to determine if they could be impaired.
You made reference to the SJC decision there. Remind us what that did and why that case was significant.
Well, essentially, it just said that the field sobriety testing system that we use currently with alcohol will still be applied to people that are under the influence of marijuana or other drugs. However, the way the officers testify to that their observations in court have differed. So they can't go into court and basically say, as a result of this field sobriety test, this person failed and therefore they're impaired by marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
They can't make that connection in court. drug recognition experts, on the other hand, which are across Massachusetts, can testify to certain things if they complete the drug recognition expert exam.
I see.
But your typical lay police officer is limited on what they can testify to in court.
Is there a danger, then, that a lot of this is going to come down to sort of subjective judgment by each particular police officer making a stop?
There is, but it is subjective, and it's always been that way. So the officers are, we've always had operating under the influence, whether it be alcohol, whether it be marijuana, whether it be opioids or whatever else. That's already happened. We've been dealing with that for a long time. What we're worried about now is any increase in this or polydrug use. So someone using alcohol in addition to other drugs such as marijuana, and that sort of thing.
Right. I mean, I guess the key difference with the sort of roadside stop and the sort of challenge facing officers like you is with alcohol, you can do a breathalyzer test on the spot, right? And you get a readout just like that. There's no equivalent test unless it's a blood test, and that's not available to you, right?
Right. And even that's there's a lot of problems with that as well. And, we've all heard the catchphrase, treat marijuana like alcohol. But in this particular case with operating under the influence, we can't because they are, as Dr. Hill said, they're very different substances. We don't have a breath test for marijuana. And in some states, such as Colorado, they have a permissible inference standard, 5 nanograms per milliliter of THC in the blood. In Washington, they have a per se limit with that same amount. Hmm. I don't see Massachusetts going in that direction just because of the way that marijuana is metabolized in the body. And the lacking of that specific number showing actual impairment with each individual person.
Mm. Dr. Hill, I mean, the chief mentioned states like Washington, Colorado, where recreational marijuana is legal, dealing with this. What lessons do they offer us?
I think one thing is that the blood test is really the best that we have at this point. So that 5 nanograms per ml limit, I mean, that has been studied. So that doesn't necessarily mean that you're impaired, but it is a good limit to start with. And so when you think about Colorado, you think about a combination of that blood limit, that level, along with the field sobriety test that the chief was talking about. And so I would hope that the Commonwealth would be thinking about that. I mean, you could have a two-tiered system where you could have certain penalties for that level violation and then other penalties if you have that level violation plus failing the field sobriety test. But I think one of my major concerns is that when you think about other countries like Canada, for example, as the chief mentioned before we came on, Canada is rolling this out very, very shortly, and they have all this figured out already. They have their plan in place, and we're kind of figuring it out somewhat in a backwards fashion, and that's very concerning.
Hmm. Explain that. How so in a backwards fashion?
Well, I mean, we have legalized cannabis here now, and now we have, the chief is on a special commission, and they're meeting monthly, I guess it is, and, they're going to come out with recommendations on how to handle this, and certainly, so we have the right people thinking about this, it seems. But it is worrisome to me that we haven't made a little more progress to this. And then the whole other issue that we haven't discussed yet is, should the Commonwealth of Massachusetts be advocating for additional research, right? We're all acknowledging that there's no 0.08 blood alcohol content equivalent for cannabis, but we've got some pretty smart people in this state. Perhaps we should be putting some funds towards finding that equivalent.
Interesting. And what's the latest research involving impairment testing? Could there be a more clear-cut answer down the road in the future?
I think so. So there are people who are interested in having that cannabis breathalyzer equivalent. And again, if this was a significant priority, if this was a priority, one would hope that there'd be funding put towards it. I mean, people are motivated by profits. And we have right now, we've got many, many people in the Commonwealth who are profiting wildly in the cannabis industry. And I would hope that when we think about an issue like this, where public health and public safety are first and foremost, that people who are profiting from cannabis in Massachusetts would be mandated in some ways to put some of those profits towards finding the answers to these important questions.
Mm. Really basic question I'd love to ask both of you. I'll come back to you, Chief. But what do we really know about the link between traffic fatalities and marijuana use. I mean, I think we're pretty certain that there's pretty concrete evidence that people who get behind a wheel drunk cause fatalities. We know that. It's been shown again and again. What evidence is there on the marijuana side?
Well, you know, that's difficult to answer. There is plenty of research out there that would indicate that traffic fatalities increase after following legalization. That happened in Colorado. It happened in Washington. In fact, there's a AAA study that kind of focuses on that. So the other issue, though, is that there are plenty of studies out there that will suggest there are experimental studies as epidemiological studies that show that marijuana does cause impairment, and that if you are under the influence of marijuana and then you get behind the wheel, that you're two times as likely to get into a crash. Mm. So that right in and of itself is very frightening. And, you know, the way we deal with this is, I know I just heard that you play the public service announcement that was out there. It's really getting the message out there and having people understand that marijuana does cause impairment, and to not get behind the wheel and drive after you've been consuming it.
Yeah.
DPH just did a study, and they did find that there's a significant amount of people in Massachusetts who use marijuana that have self-indicated that they have driven under the influence of marijuana. And so that's something that we need to address, and I think quickly. As we mentioned, Colorado, Canada already kind of dealt with this as they were rolling it out. We're kind of already behind in our game here, so something we got to catch up with.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Hill, it seems like this is we've done it successfully with alcohol. We've gotten the message out, but it seems like a particular challenge when the state says, this is legal, you can do it, it's okay. But in other words, we've got to make clear that driving impaired under marijuana is the problem, not necessarily using marijuana, which is sanctioned as legal by the state.
You're right, but I think we're looking at a knowledge gap here. The chief correctly points out that cannabis doubles your risk of having a motor vehicle accident. So that's what we know. We also know that in the states like Colorado and Washington, the use of cannabis when you're testing people who are involved in accidents, that's going up. So that doesn't necessarily mean that cannabis caused those accidents. But if we know that those numbers are going up, to me, that points to this knowledge gap that we really need to make progress in terms of the science here. So there are a number of things that we need. We need the laws, certainly, that we need to figure out what kind of standard we're going to operate with. Chief mentioned the need for drug recognition experts and funding those people as they get trained, and the shortfalls and other police officers when those people are getting trained. And then finally, we need more research, right? We need to really advance the football in that way. We can't just sit here and accept the fact that we don't have the technology when we have people who could probably help us find those answers.
Hmm, really interesting. Chief Carmichael, final question to you. As we mentioned, you're part of the state's special commission on driving impairment, which is set to deliver recommendations in the state in January. Are there already recommendations that you can sort of talk about? Have you made any progress in terms of specific policy recommendations?
So there's still a lot of discussion going on. We're sharing a lot of different documents, a lot of research. We have a great group of people on the commission, very knowledgeable, a lot of different professions that are involved with it. Some of the big things, at least from the law enforcement perspective, we are going to ask very likely that there be implied consent for drug recognition experts, because, you know, if you're arrested for operating under the influence of alcohol, you're brought back to the police station, you're off at a breath test. If you refuse the test, you can lose your driver's license. However, the test that we would use for under the influence of drugs would be the drug recognition expert, and there's no implied consent for that. So if you refuse, there's no consequence, and therefore the officers are left with you know, what basically their observations were out on the street. So we need to tighten that up a little bit and make it so that there is a consequence for refusing those drug recognition experts, and then really treat them as for what they are, drug recognition experts, so that they can complete these tests and then testify to them later in court.
All right. And final word to you, Dr. Hill. It sounds like your message more than anything is we need to get a better handle on what we don't know about this.
We do, because, I mean, there's an issue of accountability. I think the scary piece about this is that right now we have people who can be driving under the influence of cannabis, and the likelihood of them being held accountable for that transgression is very, very low. In Massachusetts, if you are charged with OUI under the influence of alcohol, where we do have good technology, your chances are pretty good of getting off if you go to a judge-only trial, for example, actually, you know, up to 80%. So yeah. I think right now, when you don't have that level of accountability with cannabis, it's quite scary.
All right. Well, that's Dr. Kevin Hill, Director of the Division of Addiction Psychiatry at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. Dr. Hill, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. It's good to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
And John Carmichael Walpole, Police Chief and a member of the Special Commission on Operating Under the Influence and Impaired Driving. Chief Carmichael, thank you so much for your time as well.
Thank you.
And listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.